Hi, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line, where we talk to your favorite comedians, artists, and we talk about their first time performing or doing their art and the disasters that, of course, came with it and what kept them going.
This is very interesting because it's usually embarrassing and terrifying, but then everybody has had a full professional career that we've been interviewing, so we want to know why, after that disgusting moment in time, did you pursue this?
Well, we talked to the success stories, but you know what would be fun? We have some failures on, and then you guess where it's going to go.
That'll be like the new era of My Opening Line.
Today's guest has been on Comedy Central, Chelsea Lately, Just for Laughs, the Montreal Comedy Festival. Gina Brion, Easily Offended is a special coming out that you'll want to see. Gina Brion.
Yay, and the crowd goes wild.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
You and we had you on Keith and the Girl. It was such a delight.
It was so much fun.
So great. You have this wonderful presence of like warmth and intelligence and hilarity and like this ease.
You guys.
How old were you when you first started stand-up?
I was 17 years old when I started.
Oh, too soon.
Yeah. I was way too young.
In school.
Yes. Technically, my first stand-up set was in front of the theater in my high school for a bunch of my friends. We were all sitting around bored, and I was always the one cracking jokes. So I picked up my disgustingly full of hair hairbrush, and it was one of those round brushes, and I just started using it as a microphone and, you know, doing corny jokes that only kids in my class would get, like, you know, like, did you see what Mr. Fine did in sixth period? And like all those corny jokes that they were like finding hilarious, and I was like, I'm a genius. I'm totally a genius, you guys.
Did everything land that time? Like, you knew your audience.
I knew my crowd. Yeah. So everything landed that time. My first official time. Actually, everything went well that time, too. Actually, my first official, like, first time I stepped on a comedy stage.
So what made it official, and how old were you?
Well, the first time I did stand up in my high school, I was probably around 16. So it was a year before I actually professionally started. It was the day of my high school graduation.
High school was busy.
High school was very busy. Right. I was a very busy bee. I was a member of like the drama club. I was in musical theater, but I was the shyest one. Like, I was the one that would sit in the back and not say anything. I was the one that didn't want any solos. I was very like, please leave me alone. Can I do props? Like, I was like that person. So I was not used to really being in the limelight. So the day of my high school graduation, my mother entered me and my twin sister. I have an identical twin sister. She entered us in a contest. Yeah.
Wait, this changes things and I don't know why.
She entered me and my twin sister in a contest called The Funniest Person from the Bronx.
And this is unrelated to the school. It just happened to be that day?
Yeah, it just happened to be that day. It was at Stand Up New York, which is a club I still perform at to this day. But that was the first club I ever performed at was Stand Up New York.
Wait, did your mom just think you guys were hilarious?
She knew that I was obsessed with comedy because I became obsessed with stand up at 14. I mean, obsessed. I watched everything stand-up related. I was a fan of everybody from all the Georges, George Carlin, George Burns, George Lopez, all of the Georges, all of the female comics. I was a big fan of Brett Butler, Margaret Cho. Brett Butler's the reason I got into comedy. I was seeing her stand-up set and falling in love with a woman who could be beautiful and funny and smart and
have an edge.
Yes, and have an edge and get the attention of a room full of people without being half naked or being dressed as a clown, which is what I grew up watching on Latino TV. Like, I would watch all the Spanish programs I would watch. It was like women were either half naked or they were legitimately dressed as clowns. Mm. That was the representation that I
grew up
with. I never
saw the clown version, but I definitely saw like, you are a supermodel, and it's always hilarious. Your co-host is just ugly. It's just the opposite
version. They would
pick
a dude that's like a total troll, and then like a girl that's like wicked hot.
Yeah, I would see. Well, even on the subway, I see ads for Latino news, and it's the crusty old guy, and the woman
and
is
the beautiful weather girl or the beautiful female anchor.
Yeah,
who that doesn't take away from her intelligence, but it was like the stuff that I would see women wearing.
But she, and that you also have to be all of these things just to be funny.
Yes. Yeah. And so when I saw Brett Butler, I was like, oh my God, she's smart. She's funny. She's beautiful. She's not half naked and dancing. She's not dressed like an idiot. Like, she's just funny. And
she
kind of
talks like how we used to only consider men talk.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, even her deep voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I think I fell in love with. I was like, she's so different. from anything I'd ever seen. And then like a month later, I saw George Lopez on like the Spanish channel, and they had two stand-up programs that were on. I think they were on the two different Spanish channels. One was called Risas y Más Risas, and the other one was called Qué Loco. Now, a lot of people like Gabe, George Lopez, Greg Giraldo, like all these people that came up on the Latin circuit would do these shows. And so I saw George Lopez on one of those shows, and I just remember thinking, so far I've seen a woman, and now I've seen a Latino. Like, I'm a hybrid mix of the, both of those things.
They don't mind me anymore.
Yeah. I'm like, I can do this. Like, as a kid, I was like, I can totally do this. I'm like the best of both worlds.
Isn't it funny that we need to see our representation?
Yes, that's how important seeing your race, your, where you come from represented was. Like, the first sitcom I remember identifying with, ironically enough, was All American Girl. Was Margaret Cho's sitcom, because she was visibly ethnic. And for me, I felt like my family, we were visibly ethnic. Even though my mom was the dark-skinned Puerto Rican, my dad's light-skinned Puerto Rican, so I came out beige. So it's confusing for lots of people.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you for understanding. I get it. People don't know what I am. I totally understand. And so when I would watch All American Girl, I was watching this this woman exist in San Francisco with her incredibly like ethnic parents. Like, her parents were like, it's like my parents being from the island, or like being from somewhere
else. Like, she's acknowledging her American version of herself with the ethnicity that like kind of clashes with it. But you brought me here.
You brought me here, and I connected with it because I know what it's like to exist in a world that's completely different from your culture. And it was just, I was drawn to it. And then she had her first special, I'm the One That I Want, where she talked about that. And I loved what she said about the show, because she talked about them making her lose weight. She talked about them telling her that she was too fat to wear a miniskirt. She talked about all these things that I was like, oh my God, this poor woman. But I'm so glad she's so brave. She's talking about this. And I was glued to the TV.
Isn't that funny? Like, just think about it. As a woman, you're supposed to be like, thanks for sharing that somebody called you fat. Mm-hmm. Like, now I identify. Now I want to do things.
Well, now I'm like, I was looking at her, and I was like, because I, at the time too, like, hated any pictures of me. I was a chubby kid. Like, I was so insecure. And everybody maintains certain insecurities as they get older. Like, I'm not going to say that I'm 100%, you know, my best friend in that respect, the way I talk to myself, because I still have days where I'm like, don't talk to yourself like that. But having a celebrity at that time speak to something that I was experiencing.
Now, is your twin sister feeling the same passion?
My twin sister, so we went up that night and we both won third place.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and I always,
they thought there was only one of you.
Yeah. I always say they couldn't tell the difference, because I was like, I was clearly meant for this. I don't know where I'm at. My sister's incredibly funny, but her passions were in helping people. So she actually became a personal trainer, and she's an amazing personal trainer. She's, because of her own insecurities that she's battled, she knows how to help people who are battling those same insecurities.
And you know how to make fun of them.
And I know how to make them laugh. So I do that.
So your mom signed you up.
Yeah.
So, and then what, you wrote something and you got ready?
I wrote a 5-minute set.
Did you just agree right away? Like, mom, you're right.
I was petrified. Okay. She was like, I signed you up for this contest.
She's not even saying I'm gonna sign you up.
No, I signed you up for this contest, because I think deep down, and this is where like, my mom is so intuitive. Like, my mom knows I have a lot of social anxiety. Like, I don't hang out outside of comedy. Like, I don't go to bars. I don't go to clubs. I'm the worst person to bring to an event, because I will sit in the corner and not do anything. And my mom knew this about me, but she also knew that I loved stand-up so much. It was the only thing that was pulling me out of my shell. So when she signed me up for it, it was like, I'm not going to give you the choice, because I know if I give you the choice, you're going to choose not to do it.
Right.
And so she just signed us up, and we went. And I remember I was scared, but I was more excited than I was scared. And I was more thankful than anything else, because I could not wait to get on stage. I could not wait to experience it.
Did you write anything down?
I did. I had like a little sheet of paper, and I did write it down. I don't exactly remember what my set was. I mean, it was so long ago. I know I talked about growing up in the South Bronx. I know I made some jokes about, you know, the neighborhood I grew up in. I grew up in the Soundview area of the South Bronx, like all the way down by the water. And, I just remember feeling so confident when I stepped on stage. Like, wow. I was like, I got this.
And it stayed there through your first line?
It did. Huh. I was so excited to be there that I couldn't wait to share this with the people. Like, I was like, oh, they're going to love what I'm saying.
And did your personality come out
on stage? Oh, totally. I think for that first set,
Because you're very, I'm in a living room with you, but I'm in command of what we're talking about when you're on stage. You're very like, I'm your best friend, but I have the mic.
But I'm in control of it.
Yeah.
Which it was always kind of the feel. I guess I always figured some of my favorite comics when I would watch them, you know, I'm a big George Carlin fan, and it would always seem like he was just talking to people. There was no, it wasn't like he was a game show host and there were these prepared lines necessarily. You know, you would watch him connect with people on how real he was and how he was just a regular person.
And did you connect like that right away? Did people
right
laugh?
Right away, I felt like because I think my mentality was, I want these people to know that I want them to feel like this is a friendly environment. I want them to feel like we're all friends just hanging out.
And you knew how to turn that on even though you usually are in the corner.
I think because I had spent so many years being that friend and that rock for so many of my friends that I was like, oh, this is easy with a room full of strangers. Like, this is easy. I'm gonna make this feel like we've been friends for years.
Did something not land that you expected to land? Or did
not
you lose
the first time. Okay. Second time, yeah. Okay. Because they called us back. Once we got the call back, I was petrified. The first time I went up, I was so confident, it was great. The second time when they called us for the call back.
Did your sister come?
She did. Okay. And I'm pretty sure she had a better set than me. I bombed my second time on stage.
What happened?
So horrifically. I wasn't prepared. Mm-hmm. I tried to write a whole new set. And I didn't realize that in comedy, when you're doing something like a competition and they're asking you to come back, they don't necessarily need to see a new set because it's a different audience.
And at the same time, you're probably overly confident. The first time I went on stage, I was great.
I was 17 and I had done great the first time. So I was like, I'm a comic genius. So you guys are going to love everything I write. And I bombed horrifically.
Like the entire time?
The entire set. There was not one laugh. Oof. And to the point where I actually had a prop for my last joke. And I forgot it. And I had to ask my sister to get the prop from the back of the room. And I was mortified in silence, all in complete silence. The audience has no desire to give me anything at this point.
Hold on, guys. You'll see.
It's going to be hilarious, guys. Just give me 5 seconds. Just go. Come on. Hurry up. Hurry up.
Now, I don't want to tell you this after the fact, but what if you said thank you and that's me, my sister? The end. And coming up next, me.
Again. One more time for my face with better jokes.
Does, when you bomb, do you think, hey, maybe I'm not good at this after all? Or do you know, hey, okay, this is a skill, but this is what I want
to
do?
Oh, every time I bomb to this day, I'm like, I'm probably not really good at this. Like, every single time. To this day, if I have a bad set, I'm like, I should be a teacher. I shouldn't do this anymore.
But despite bombing, it sounds like you're like, I still know I'm made to do this.
I always, okay, so like my defining moment in my career was one of the worst bombs I've ever had in my life. And it happened in Connecticut. Shout out to Connecticut.
Connecticut's first shout out.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Shout out to Connecticut for like, my first bomb. Well, my first
awful
bomb.
They're like, what is a shout out? Is she yelling at us? Yeah. Oh, she's so Puerto Rican.
These ethnics, they're so crazy. I was in Connecticut. I was doing a show and it was with some of the people I absolutely love in on the Latin circuit. Like, and I was, you know, hoping I could impress them because they were like all way more known than I was. And right. I had dyed my hair bleach blonde. I'm burping coffee. I'm so classy. I was bleach blonde. So I was a little bleach blonde, dark eyebrowed Latina. It looked insane. I don't know why people in my life let me walk around like that. Because when I see pictures, I'm like, you heathens let me walk around looking like a hot mess. So I was on stage.
Wait, and how long into your career are you?
This was about a year or 2 years in, right? Because okay. I was about 18 or 19, I want to say, when this happened. And no, yeah, it would have been like probably 19 because I would have had enough stage time to have been like, okay, well, I can go on the road. Mm-hmm. Connecticut was the road to me. And so I went to this gig and they were going to give me like 10 minutes. And I was so excited.
Were you getting paid? $10.
I was supposed to get paid. I don't even remember how much. It was probably like $20. Who cares? Mm-hmm. I was excited just to do 10 minutes of stage time because I only had 5 minutes of stage time. Right. So I was like, I can totally pull off an extra 5 minutes of just banter because I'm a genius.
Also, in Connecticut, they speak slower. So I'll just speak slower.
I'll just my 5 minutes will take 10.
And to recap.
So what I did just 5 minutes ago, let's just go over all of that. I I was doing good for 5 minutes. I was doing decent. I won't even say good. I was doing decent. They didn't hate me. By minute six, I was bombing already. I had nothing. After I finished my 5 minutes, I had nothing.
Did you consider going, you know what, that's it? Like, I'm just...
I didn't know that I had that right.
Okay.
At that point, I was like, wait, I don't have any more material, but I'm supposed to do 10 minutes, and I don't want to disappoint anybody, but I don't have anything else. And I started bombing.
Wait, did you have a concept for the second 5 minutes?
Nothing.
You just was like, I know how
I
to
just
chit-chat.
Started talking, and words were just pouring out of my mouth, and I was like, none of this is funny. None of this is funny. None of this is funny. And so I just kept talking, and by minute seven, the audience was not liking me anymore. And they started to heckle me in the weirdest way possible. They weren't heckling me to me. They were yelling to each other alternative job choices that I should have chosen.
Oh my God.
They were like, I think she'd make a good nurse. And then one guy go, no, I think she'd make a good cop. Like, just everybody just going back and forth, naming things I should have done other than stand-up comedy.
You hear people ripping out help wanted ads for you.
Oh, exactly. Hey, girl, you want to talk later? I'm looking for a babysitter. Just a bunch of like, and I'm just like, yeah, you guys are probably right. Like, I was
did you actually respond to it?
I was trying to, but I didn't have the stage legs. I wasn't quick. I had nothing. And so by minute
like
eight,
oh, that's a good one. I considered that anyway.
Yeah, right. I was, yeah, exactly. Like trying stuff like that. So the host comes running. I see him running from the back of the room. He comes running by minute eight. He is running down there. And I'm just like inside, I'm dying. Like my inner child she's out the door. Like I can't, feet swinging. She's out of here. Like she's done. I was like, she is done tonight. And so he got me off stage like 2 or 3 minutes early. And I was so thankful, ran outside crying, like just bawling my eyes out. Called my twin sister, and I was like, I don't ever want to do stand-up comedy again. I quit. I don't want to do this anymore. And my sister, she was like, shut up. She was like, you've been meant to do this since you were a kid. She was like, there's no way you're quitting, and there's no way I'm letting you quit. This was a bad show. That was it. And I was like, because I knew she was right.
You should have been like, you're stupid.
No, you're stupid. You don't even do stand-up anymore, so like, don't tell me what to do. But it hit me. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, she had more faith in me than I had in me, because I was ready to quit. I was like, I can't do this. I'm not funny. I'm not ready for this. I'm not tough enough for this. And I really thought all of those things in that night, but she really helped me through that. And she's the one that, with that little push, I was like, she's right. I'm never giving up. No matter how hard it gets, I'm never giving up.
And you never had that moment again of like...
Oh, girl, every year. I want to quit every year, but I just don't.
Your sister tries less and less with these speeches. You were born to do it. This is what you did. You love all the Georges.
Don't forget about the Georges. She just get less enthusiastic. You know what? You want to quit? Just go ahead and quit every year.
One second. I want to tell everybody about Quip. Q-U-I-P. It's the toothbrush I use. Hemda uses it. It's electric, but not big and bulky like a regular electric one when you think electric, right?
Yeah, not as expensive either. It was so affordable that I have one at home. And I also have one when I stay at my brother's family's place. It's an electric toothbrush that doesn't take up the amount of room that the regular one does. And it's just, it actually is the size of a regular toothbrush. So here's what I like actually the most in it. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm brushing my teeth for 2 minutes because it indicates it every 30 seconds. So I know to do 30 seconds on the top right, 30 seconds on the top left, bottom right, bottom left, obviously. And then when it's done, it's this sense of satisfaction. Actually, I told my friend Aldo about it, and he recently texted me. He said, dude, I came in for my 6-month dental cleaning. It took less than 15 minutes on the actual cleaning. That goddamn Quip really works.
That's right. It's great. You're going to love it too. Over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do. Quip starts at just $25.
That's the craziest part.
Yeah. And if you go to getquip.com/MOL for my opening line, /MOL. Right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/MOL.
You talk about getting put on like the Latino circuit,
yeah,
like put opening for Latino guys, being put on TV shows that were on the Latino channels. Do you get any which way about like, hey, I also just tell jokes?
I think in the beginning, I wanted to maybe differentiate myself from other, like from performers that only stayed on the Latin circuit or only there. And then there are comics that only stay on a certain circuit because it becomes very successful for them. So for me, it was like, I don't want to be put in a box, but I'd be lying to myself if I denied the fact that I am Latino, that that influences my point of view, that my background is part of who I am. And when they wanted me on Latino shows, and also in the beginning of my career, that's all I could get. They wouldn't book me on anything at mainstream on mainstream shows.
You weren't like the token person that they always had to.
They would always throw me on the Latino shows, and then I became the token person.
I see.
Then once
so first you got to do that, then you're the token person.
Yes. Okay. Then they realized, oh, she could probably do our mainstream shows. So they would throw me a spot. They would throw me like a guest spot for like 5 minutes or 6 minutes on stage.
Did you feel like you had to address that in the quote regular shows when you're the token person?
In the beginning, yes.
Yeah.
I did, and I did address it because I mean,
how do you address that?
I would always do a soft addressing. It was never like I was attacking somebody. It was always like, well, you know, like, and there's a lot of comics that have like one liners like, well, welcome to the ethnic portion of the show, like stuff like that. Like you can throw stuff out there that's like a soft jab because you don't want to insult the people giving you stage time, but you want to let them know, like, I know what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, I know why I'm here. I'm not blind to the fact that you're using me because you need a Latin stand-up comic on the show that can perform.
And now you're called diverse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we're just diverse. The show is so diverse. It means there are ethnics.
Right. Between with your successes, what made you go like, whoa, I'm doing it. I am a comic. There is no question. Or were you able to give your mom some kind of gift?
And yeah.
It's like, look, this all came from that high school silliness.
That time you signed me up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, the two biggest, I think, moments for me was one when I was doing my first special, Pacifically Speaking, when I was filming that. That was a big deal. Like, my parents came and it was a big experience for them because all of a sudden their little girl, who had been funny her whole childhood and wanted to be a comedian, now there were lights and cameras and people were taking pictures of her and pictures with her. And my parents were very much like, what's going on?
Huh? So this is the first time they saw that?
They saw all of that commotion. They knew that I was working very hard. They knew that every win that I had, even a small win, was a big win to them. So when I was filming my special, I remember my dad, who was a very big personality, was surprisingly quiet and to himself the whole day. And I thought maybe he was sick because at the time he was going through treatment for prostate cancer. So I thought maybe he wasn't feeling well. So the next day.
No big deal. I'll just go tell some jokes.
Yeah, I'll just go tell some jokes, Dad. And then we'll talk about this whole thing that you're going through. And I was like, I asked him the next day. I said, Dad, you were so quiet the other day. Like, were you feeling okay? And he was like, he said the sweetest thing. He was like, I didn't want to embarrass you. He was so afraid to be his regular self because to him, this was such a huge, extravagant event. And I was like, Dad, you don't ever have to be ashamed to be yourself. You don't ever have to think that you're going to embarrass me.
Where was he getting that from? Had you ever expressed like, hey, Dad?
Probably from my siblings. I think a lot of them, look, my dad has a very big personality.
What does that mean then?
He can be loud. He can be obnoxiously loud. He's very opinionated. He talks a lot. And for my siblings, I think that always meant like, oh, Dad is going into another one of his like long speeches. And for me, because I'm always fascinated by people and how people work, even when I was a kid, I would sit there and just listen to my dad and just be like, wow, I don't know if he's even remembering everything in this story correctly because I've heard this story 15 times, but I'm sitting there and I'm just like, wow, just the amount of experience he's had as a person. And him getting that from my siblings, I think put that thought in his head, like, I don't want to embarrass my daughter. Because anything that I did in comedy always felt like I was famous to my parents. If my name got on a flyer, I was famous. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's how these little things to them were these huge moments. So they almost don't know. They handle everything with that same, like, attitude. Like, everything. It doesn't matter. Nothing's bigger than the next thing. Mm. Everything's the same thing.
How was your mom during the taping?
My mom was amazing. She's always amazing. My mom is very much, she's very stoic, just very in control of everything. She was her normal, quiet, observant self. And the second thing that
If I was your mom, I'd be like, I knew it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're welcome, guys. Yeah, yeah, I gifted you her. She's amazing.
I can see the future and everyone's welcome.
Yeah. My thank yous to them can never be too much or too many. Like, I'm so grateful for their support. And
but did it help you or make you nervous? This is a big deal for you. You're on TV. You're recording. This is,
for me, it helped me because I wanted them to see that all of their support didn't go, you know, just... It happened. I needed them to see that it happened. I'm like, look, see, this is what I was working for. This is what I
busted. Did they cry? Who cried? Someone cried.
I think they got a little teary eyed, but not too much. My parents are very like, we're not gonna embarrass you. But
I think afterwards, if I was your sister, I would bawl and then take pictures with everybody so everyone could be like, Gina totally cried during her special.
They were more, I think when I, there was one time when I was proudest of myself, I actually got to pay for their vacation. Then my mom called me and she was like, hey, I need some help buying flights. I don't really know. They don't travel a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, I got you, mom. No worries.
Like,
and
she didn't say I need help with financial.
No, she was like, I need you to find the flights. And so I bought the flights. I paid for their rental car. And my mom was just like, wait, I didn't want you to do that. And I was like, mom, this is my thank you. The fact that I can pay for your vacation right now, the fact that, you know, you allowed me to be out late at night when I was a teenager to watch comedy, to watch things that you normally would not be okay with me watching. I needed her to know that, like, all of this, I don't forget the support that you guys gave me through all of this.
That's a big deal.
And that, for me, that was like that brought a tear to my eye, being able to pay for my parents' vacation.
Okay, that's all I wanted was one tear.
Yeah, you got your tear. You got your stinking tear. That was definitely a big moment, though.
Was there a thing that you were like, this is what I heard as a child, and I knew that I'm a stand-up when I got entrance into this special or this festival? Or
for me, getting into the Montreal Comedy Festival was like a huge deal because I had always watched like clips from Just for Laughs, and I had stand-up DVDs and VHS. That's right, VHS. Of like Just for Laughs.
And you never went there before?
I had never gone there before. Okay. I had never even auditioned. I was so afraid. And my first audition for Just for Laughs, I didn't get it. Like, and I'm the kind of person that if I don't get it once, I'm like, I don't ever want to do it again because I get butt hurt and my ego is affected.
It's but like, if they don't want me, they're not going to want me next year.
Mm-hmm. And then plus the person that I contacted about the festival was like super rude. And it was one of those things where I had to let it roll off my back because I was like, you know what? I do want to be a part of this festival, even though this person is really being disrespectful right now in the way that they've responded to my questions. Mm. I'm just like, all right, maybe you're not the right person to direct these questions to. And then the next year when I did it, I got into the festival.
And it's not like anyone can audition. They're inviting you to audition.
Yes, right? You have to be invited to audition. It's really hard to just get on a showcase.
Yeah, so even getting the audition is, I got an audition for this festival. Yeah.
And it meant a lot to me. Like the first year I went, I was so excited. I did New Faces and it was, that's for all of the up and coming comics. So New Faces is a big deal at Montreal.
That's a show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The New Faces show, everybody goes to it. All the industry goes to it because they want to see who these up and comers are. And so my first year at Montreal it was only a week. I was only there for a week.
That's a long time.
And then the next
time. Did they put you up? Did they? Because a lot of times they did. Okay. That's a big deal. A lot of times you have to make your way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice. I just enjoyed it so much. I loved the festival. I couldn't wait to be back. I think they brought me back the next year for a really quick, like short set for another like week. And then the next time they brought me back was for the ethnic shows. And that was...
Did they call it ethnic shows?
Yeah, because it's all different comics from different backgrounds. And it was a really fun show. The ethnic show and the nasty show are the two longest running shows for the festival. They run for, I want to say, about a month. And so I was there in Montreal for almost about a month.
Who qualifies to be ethnic at these shows? Just if you're not white or if you have material that's ethnic related?
I think it could be both, honestly, because, I mean, there had such a mix of people. We had people that were from South Africa. We had people that were of Jewish descent. We had people that were...
Does the program say? Well, I know ahead of time, two Jews, a black, because I don't want to be shocked.
It actually does. Like on the posters, they have our flags next to us.
Is that
so that
true?
People know. Yeah, so that people know. And it's a really, really fun show. And I've done it, I want to say two times. So I've been there a lot in Montreal and I fell in love with it. And it's the reason why I'm desperately trying to learn French. Mm. So that the next time I go there, I don't embarrass myself.
Right. The Duolingo app is amazing.
I know, I have it. That's
Isn't
when
it
I'm
amazing?
I'm learning French, Italian, and German.
All right, you're
now.
Showing off now.
Well, you haven't heard me speak it, so I wouldn't say I'm showing off. I'm just doing too much is really what I'm doing.
She just speaks all three at once.
Yeah, that's it. I just throw different words together and I hope it works.
She thinks she's speaking Italian, but it's really French. Right.
When you did your first HBO show.
Yeah.
Standing ovation.
Right?
Yes.
I
that's crazy.
They couldn't get her off stage because she doesn't know how long you're supposed to stand there.
I had no idea. I didn't know I could leave. I got a standing ovation. I told a story at the end of my Entrenos set, which was the first thing I did for HBO Latino, was a show called Entrenos, which means between us. That's the Spanish translation. But the show was in English. Everybody relax. The English translation of Entrenos is
between us. Can you do a set in Spanish?
Me personally, absolutely not. I've never done it. I could, but I have not.
Because that's hard. I speak Hebrew pretty fluently, but if you ask me to be funny, it's not gonna, I gotta like really think.
Exactly, because all my thoughts are in English. Yeah. So to translate takes me a little while. Mm-hmm. And it's the way you use words in comedy is so important. And so for me, I've never done it. I've been invited to do stand-up.
Did you do it?
I'm too scared.
Okay.
I wanna do it. I wanna do it to challenge myself, but I will. For that particular series, though, it used to be in Spanish, and then they switched it to English. So my set was in English, and I told a story that I had gotten used to. It wasn't a funny ha-ha story. I always go like this. I always say, I'm going to end with a story that's not funny ha-ha. It's more like, aw. Uh-huh. And so I ended with a, aw. And they all, like, gave me a standing ovation, and I was so taken aback that, like, when I went backstage, I just broke down in tears. And the behind-the-scenes guy was like, oh, my God, he grabbed the camera. He's, like, trying to film me crying. And I'm, like, crying, and I'm like, don't film me. My makeup is running. Like, I was just, I couldn't. It was such an epic moment.
The camera guy was like,
aw. Aw, look at her cry. Yeah, like the stage manager like hugged me as I was like, I gave him the mic and I was like, could you not relax? But yeah, that was
what was that about? Why was it so emotional?
Because I grew up watching comics on HBO and on Showtime. It was the only way I really saw specials in the beginning, when I would see an hour special on like Showtime or like HBO. So for me, it was an epic moment to be working with HBO. And it still is for the special I have coming out now. It was still such a big thing. Those three letters meant everything to me. And now it's just, I've been working with them so much. One of my friends actually was on two podcasts. It's been called H Brion instead of HBO, which I love. Marketing idea. But it was such an epic moment working with them that it just all hit me at that moment.
Right.
Right at the end of my set.
What could have sped things up for you or calmed you down more as you were coming up? If you knew, what advice would you give specifically to yourself?
Specifically, Keith. Right. Please.
Specifically.
Please.
I would specifically tell myself to the advice that I was given by a headliner years ago by Mr. Iglesias himself. Always ask questions.
No, what does that mean?
Like, how are you doing today, crowd? Like that.
No. I mean, I appreciate where you're going with that, Keith.
Have you guys heard of these airplanes like that?
What's the deal? No, I mean, for the business side of things, always ask questions, always be informed. Because for a lot of performers, I feel like we don't ask enough questions.
Because you're just happy to, like, before you change your mind, let me say yes and do the thing that you want me to do. And that's why questions. You stay on stage for an extra 5 minutes.
Even though you don't have it.
Yeah, the question should have been like, can I go?
Right.
can I leave?
Can I go to the bathroom?
I would really like to leave right now. I would tell my younger self that, like, always ask questions. Ask people, be inquisitive, find out. Yes, exactly.
I have a question mark tattoo I just showed her.
Yeah.
Question everything.
Well, that's great. GinaBrionComedy.com is the website, and you are searching for the top Latino comedians. Now, you're the gatekeeper.
I'm the figurehead more than anything else. Yeah. I purposely kept myself out of any decision making because some of my absolute favorite Latino comics have signed up for this competition, and I want everybody to have a fair shot. Yeah. I wanted no chance of anybody to be like, oh, that's favoritism, that's this, that's that. So
can
I was
you
like,
avoid it? Because it's hard, right? If you favor someone in your head, you're biased. And
that's why I took myself out of. I don't have any say in who wins or who gets this. I'm literally just hosting and promoting this contest. But to have a platform to showcase Latino talent is a big deal to me. And it means a lot to me. So I wanted this contest to go as fairly as possible. And I wanted as many people to have this opportunity as possible. So when I put it out there, and we're working with the New York Latino Film Festival, we're working with two huge entities right now. Mm. HBO Latino and the New York Latino Film Festival have teamed up for this.
Wow, wow,
so
wow.
it's a chance to be seen by so many people. And I'm really looking forward to what kind of talent I get to watch.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Look at this. Full circle. Good for you. I mean it. That's great.
Good for you.
I know.
For you.
He always sounds sarcastic. Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah, must be nice.
From his new book, I Mean It. Gina, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com. Mm-hmm.